Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, dude, bring them in! Just came on! The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball! Brad Lynch does it again and stays perfect for the 2008 season! Yo, dude, bring them in!
That was of course legendary Philadelphia Philly broadcaster Harry Callis with the call as the Philadelphia Phillies took home their first championship since 1980. It's been 25 years since the city has celebrated a championship. You gotta go back to of course the 83-76ers and there was a time when Harry Callis was the only reason why you even listened to Philadelphia baseball or even watched Philadelphia baseball, because you surely was not paying your hard-earned money to go see a Phillies win. This is a franchise that has lost over 10,000 games, a franchise that once you got past that 1983 season when they went to the World Series and lost to the Baltimore Orioles, there really was only not too much to root for. I mean, you had Mike Schmidt at the end of his career, Lenny Dykstra in 93, and Curt Schilling, whose talent and was wasted in Philadelphia for the most part with them having so many bad teams. But that is not the case any longer, as the Philadelphia Phillies are world champions. And I wanted to focus more today about them, not so much the players. I mean, you know Cole Hamels was great during the postseason. You know Brad Lynch was off the charts, going, you know, perfect 49-49 with saves. You know Ryan Howard, you know, can hit the ball. You know all this. To me, this championship is about the Philadelphia fan. And, you know, I grew up there, not in Philadelphia. I grew up in a suburb outside of Philadelphia, about 30 minutes away. So I know what the fans are going through. I know what the fans went through. I didn't, luckily for me, I never rooted for any Philadelphia teams, because I would have been, you know, I would not have seen a championship in my lifetime, basically. You know, I don't think I would remember the 83 Sixers at 5 years old. So, I mean, and I don't even want to hear from fans who are 40 and over. These are for the fans that are 30 and under. Because if you're 40 and over, you had a great run. If you're 40 and over, you had a great run of championships and championship appearances, say from 74 to 83, where the Flyers were winning championships, the Sixers won a championship or at least competed for a championship during that time period. The Eagles went to a Super Bowl. So, I mean, you guys have no room to complain as you're 40 and over. It's the fans that 30 and under who haven't seen any championships, who have seen their teams lose in championship games, whether it be the Philadelphia Sixers back in 2001, or whether it be the Eagles back in the 2004 season with losing to the New England in the Super Bowl. And I talked to a friend last weekend, which made me think about this, big-time Philadelphia fan. If there was a cricket team, if Philadelphia had a professional cricket team, he would root for them, because the guy just loves Philadelphia. He's just a Philadelphia fanatic. And he was getting on me about rooting for other teams outside of Philadelphia, even though I grew up 30 minutes from Philadelphia. We, you know, we're joking back and forth with that. But the guy, I mean, his name's Craig Smith, real close friend of mine. I went to school with. The guy is 27 years old, and before this week, he had never seen a championship in his entire adult life from one of his teams. And I'm here. I am. You know, Laker fan, Washington Redskins fan. I know it has been spoiled with championships as far as basketball, as far as the Lakers are concerned, with the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm thinking to myself, I couldn't even imagine that. I mean, I couldn't even imagine rooting for teams all my life and not winning a championship, or not seeing one of my teams win a championship. So those are the fans who you're happy for. Those 20, those 30 and under fans who have never seen, who have been almost, I'm not going to say a laughing stock, because it's not like those franchises have not been in somewhat contention. I mean, the Flyers have been, you know, made a Stanley Cup final during that time period. Like I said, the Eagles have made a Super Bowl and have been one of the best franchises in the NFL over the past decade or so. So they've had success. But again, they hadn't won a championship until now. And the Philadelphia Phillies, listen, you watch enough baseball, and I don't care if it could be the year 2058. The way to win a championship in baseball will always remain the same. You get great starting pitching. I mean, you get great pitching and great defense. And you get a Cole Hamels, you know, who was the MVP of the World Series, also the MVP of the LCS. And you get a Brad Lidge, who looked to be in 2004 a guy who was, you know, who was going to be the heir apparent to Mariano Rivera as being the best coach in baseball. I mean, this guy, when he was with the Astros, I remember that 2004 postseason, he was untouchable, unhittable. I'm like, this was the next big time closer. He gets to 2005 and gives up that memorable home run to Albert Pujols. And it basically took him 3 years. I know he had a couple of injuries, but the injuries were not that serious. He was mentally injured. That's what it was. His psyche was injured. And it basically took Brad Lidge the better part of 3 years to recover from that 2005 Albert Pujols home run back in the LCS in 05. And boy, did he pay off for the Philadelphia Phillies this year, going 49-49 with the saves and just – you know, he made you nervous if you're a Philadelphia fan, you know, a few times. But the bottom line is, he got the job done. And I would take him going perfect with the save opportunity with no blown saves over, say, a K-Rod, who I've seen blown saves in big spots in the postseason in the last 2 years against the Red Sox. Sure, he'll make you nervous. He'll put some runners on, but he gets the job done. And Liz returned. He returned back to his dominant self over the course of this postseason with the Philadelphia Phillies. And again, you can't be more happy. Even if you don't like Philadelphia, I understand that fans have a bad rap, but for the most part, the Philadelphia fan is a good fan. They're honest. They want the players. They like the blue collar players. They don't like they do not like the prima donnas. Trust me. The last thing they want is a guy who comes in. And thinks that he's entitled to something because of reputation or because of how much money they're making. They can't stand that. But overall, I think the Philadelphia fans are good fans, and they certainly deserve this championship. And listen, in terms of the future with the Phillies, I don't think I see a dynasty in their future. I don't think their starting pitching is good enough for that. Pasco Hamels, they really lack some good starting pitching. I mean, Jamie Moyer is about 50 years old. Joe Bland's okay. Brett Myers had a nice season. She's pretty good. So I don't see them. I don't see them becoming the next dynasty per se. But they're going to be in the mix for the next two or three, four or five years. They have, again, Liz is in the prime of his career. Cole Hamels is only 24 years old. That lineup is great. Whether they lose Pat Burrell or not, Rollins in the prime of his career. Ryan Howard is a big time hitter. I mean, just that lineup. They have a deep. They have depth coming off the bench, so they'll be around. They will be in contention for, like I said, for the next 3 or 4 years, and certainly an opportunity to repeat next year. We have a big program lined up for you. We're going to discuss the death of the NFL quarterbacks, of the NFL quarterback position. What has happened to it? Why is it in its current state? It's not a good state. If you watch enough NFL, you'll know what I'm talking about. Also, some college football, some games. We had a lot of games, a couple big games that are lined up that could decide, you know, conference championships or even teams being eliminated from the national championship picture. The call number is 347-215-6176. I have a new segment I'm going to add that I've decided to add to the program in regard to the NBA. We'll be doing the NBA beat. We'll look back at the news in the NBA, and we'll also look at some couple other things that are going on as the NBA concludes this first week of play, which was, for the most part, on the floor, almost semi-uneventful, but there were a couple of things that went on that I think should be discussed. We have all that in the next 50 minutes or so, and we'll switch over to the college football, where you have two great games and two other games that are worth noting. Number one, of course, you have Florida at Georgia. Florida and playing Georgia in Jacksonville, and what's been called the world's largest cocktail party for years now. And you want to talk about revenge? I mean, it's been well publicized. Georgia last year went, after they scored an opening touchdown, went and danced in the end zone, got a penalty flag. Mark Richt laughing on who orchestrated the whole thing, by the way. The head coach orchestrated this whole thing, laughing on the sidelines. Urban Meyer has been annoyed throughout the whole entire offseason, and even wrote a book. Even had a book where he talked about it. So I mean, you know how infuriated he is about it. And this game has definitely SEC and national championship implications. This is another elimination game. I mean, both these teams have one loss. The loser of this game is done as far as any national championship hopes they may have. And more than likely, they're done as far as any BCS game hopes. This is for the SEC East Championship for the most part. And if you want to see some athletes on the field, some top NFL prospects on the field, this is the game. You will see speed. You will see speed, you know, on defense. You will see speed in special teams. You will see speed at the running back position. I mean, there will be probably more athletes on the field in this particular game between these two teams than any possible other matchup that you could find in college football. And these two teams do not like each other. Florida, Georgia has kind of been the stepchild to Florida in the last 15 to 20 years. Florida has dominated this series, smacked Georgia around, even when Georgia has had top 10 quality teams. But now, you know, Georgia coming off the win last year seems to be on that level of Florida, and as far as personnel, they are on that level. I mean, Georgia now gets that top recruit that once went to Florida, once went to LSU, once went to USC. Georgia now gets those kind of players, and they have a tremendous coach in Mark Richt, who has done since he left Florida State as the offensive coordinator, has done a great job at taking that program to another level. And it should be a great game. I'm looking forward to it. Again, there's a lot on the line with that game, and a loser of that will be done as far as any championship hopes that they may have. The other big game is a primetime game, of course, that will be seen on ABC, Texas at Texas Tech. I'm anxious. I've seen Texas enough this year. I've seen them at least a half dozen times over the course of the season. But I've not seen Texas Tech. I'm anxious to see what Texas Tech is all about. This is not the first time that Texas Tech has had a big-time offense. Texas Tech, they always seem to produce quarterbacks who put up these ridiculous numbers, lead the nation in passer rating and yards and touchdowns. You know, they get running backs who put up big numbers, their receivers who put up big numbers. The offense has never been a problem for Texas Tech. It's been the other side of the ball that has been the issue for them. But supposedly this year they have shored up their defense, which makes them dangerous and makes them a possible national championship contender. Again, I will believe it when I see it. And they will get the ultimate acid test against that Texas offense. And right now the front runner for the Heisman Trophy and Colt McCoy. You know, the one thing that would bother you from a Texas standpoint is this would be the fourth straight game that Texas will have against a ranked opponent. Remember, they beat Oklahoma, who was number one at the time. They beat Missouri, who was 15 at the time. And last week, of course, they beat Oklahoma State, who was ranked, I believe, number six at the time. So this is, I mean, they're going through a gauntlet, an unprecedented gauntlet of ranked opponents. And, I mean, at some point, you think they would have a letdown, run out of gas, but they've been able to get through it so far, going 3-0. And for all purposes, this may be the last major hurdle for Texas. If Texas goes out there and wins this game, they could possibly meet Missouri in the Big 12 championship. And, I mean, they destroyed Missouri the first time they met him. Who knows? Maybe Missouri has a chance to upset them. But if Texas goes out there and wins this game, there's a good chance that Texas will be playing for the national championship. Because all their opponents, all that they would have gone through, all their tough opponents, and all the major opponents, all their top teams are in that Big 12 South. I mean, you have Texas, you have Texas Tech, you have Oklahoma, you have Oklahoma State. The Big 12 North is weak. I mean, you're talking about Colorado, Nebraska, Kansas, Kansas State, teams like that. Missouri, which is supposed to be a top team this year, but kind of has faded in the last few weeks. So, I mean, this is a big game. Texas Tech can make a statement with this game, and they still have some tough opponents left on their schedule in regards to Oklahoma, having both Oklahoma and Oklahoma State still to play. So they wouldn't be out of the woods either, even if they want this game. This is a big game for Texas, a chance to maybe cement their place in a BCS championship game. The other game of note, but not as big, of course, is Florida State at Georgia Tech. Florida State has crept up. And I don't think they're not that good. And this is coming from a Florida State fan. Florida State has crept up into number 15 in the BCS rankings, number 15 in the country, and they are tied for the division lead with their land division lead with Maryland at 3-1. This is a big game because Maryland, of course, Florida State will play Maryland later on in the season. Florida State has a chance to definitely get to the ACC championship game and has a chance to play in a BCS bowl. And you know, for Georgia Tech, they're coming off a loss last week. It'll be really interesting to see, you know, how they respond. Like I said, I don't think Florida State is that good. I've seen Florida State this year. They have pretty good defense, good athletes on, you know, offensively. But they don't have a quarterback. And how Florida State and Miami both have gone this almost 10 years without having six or seven years without finding a quarterback in the state of Florida, it is beyond me. I don't see how you can be in that state. South Florida has a quarterback who will someday play on Sunday, but Florida State, Miami somehow cannot find a quarterback. So that's a big game in terms of the ACC, which is wide open right now. I mean, the ACC, you know, Florida State could win the ACC, Maryland could win the ACC, Virginia could win the ACC. I mean, who knows who's going to win that conference? It is balanced. There are no dominant teams in the ACC whatsoever. Maryland has a big game next week against Virginia Tech. Maryland, who, despite losing to Middle Tennessee State early in the season, finds themselves in a position to possibly play for a BCS game, which gives you lets you know how wide open the conference is. So that's something that definitely ACC fans will keep their eyes on. Coming up, we still have the death of an NFL quarterback. We'll definitely get to that, but right now I'm going to introduce a new segment to you called the NBA Beat, where I will look at the week in the NBA with the news, and we'll also look at contender, pretender, why certain teams may not be as good as you think. First and foremost, the big story in the NBA this week was Greg Oden, who went down in opening night, the first half against the Lakers. He's going to be out with a foot sprain 2 to 4 weeks. And listen, I like Oden. I think he has a chance to be a great player, has a chance to be, you know, a cornerstone of a franchise and lead them two championships. But this is the third straight year going back to high school that the guy has had an injury and has had to miss some time. You remember he got hurt in that McDonald's All-American game where he hurt his wrist, caused him to miss the first few games, you know, first 10 to 15 games of his freshman year at Ohio State. Then last year, of course, he was out the entire season with the microfracture surgery. Now he's out with a foot sprain. And, you know, I was watching that game on opening night on Tuesday. And to me, it looked like he just sprained his ankle. I said, okay, he sprained his ankle. He'll be out maybe a couple of days, day to day. But, you know, it turns out they had, when they took the x-rays and MRI, he had a sprained foot. I don't know. I'll be a little bit nervous if I were somebody within the Portland Trailblazer organization, and certainly somebody if I was a Portland Trailblazer fan. And you're going to think, and the Trailblazer fans are going to think about Sam Bowie. I don't think he's not going to be Sam Bowie. I think he'll be a much better player than that. I would just worry about his health and him staying on the floor, because again, already he's shown, I mean, you know, the first game, the first week of the NBA, the guy's hurt already. I mean, it's just something to think about. I mean, obviously you had to take him with the number one pick. There's no doubting that. But a guy of that size that continuously comes up with these injuries, you know, sometimes you have these talented players who just can't stay on the floor. And we see it in every sport where a guy is just injury prone. And it doesn't go away. It does not go away for the most part. So that's something to keep your eye on if you're a Portland Trailblazer fan. Also, Andrew Bynum signs a contract extension with the Los Angeles Lakers, 4 years, $57.4 million. And here's why you had to make the move if you're the Lakers. Number one, and I heard some talk from the LA Times about maybe the Lakers should have waited and saw what they got out of Andrew Bynum this year. You don't wait because some team out there, let's say Andrew Bynum goes out there and has a good year, has a quality year. Now, the Lakers hold his rights because even if another team would make him an offer, he would be a restricted free agent, meaning the Lakers could match any offer. Let's say a team goes out there and offers him 5 years at $80 million and 5 years at $90 million. Sure, the Lakers would match him. But by signing him now, you know, you probably save anywhere from $20 to $30 million in terms of the total amount of the contract. Sign him now, get it out the way. It's not going to be talked about anymore. That is done. Get it out the way. And also, remember, Kobe Bryant has a chance to terminate his contract after the 2009-2010 season. Kobe Bryant can become he can opt out of his deal. So now you lock Andrew Bynum up, and you know that reassures Kobe Bryant that hey, the Lakers will be a championship caliber team for the next 2 or 3 years, and more than likely, Kobe Bryant will re-sign with the Los Angeles Lakers. He probably wouldn't re-sign anyway because the Lakers can pay him more money than any other team in the league. But this reassures that. And again, big men, you're going to overpay for big men in the NBA. That's all there is to it. They're like quarterbacks in the NFL. They're like starting pitchers in baseball. There are not that many many quality big men in the NBA. Guys who are good get paid like great players. Players who are great get paid like immortal players. And that's the way it is. We've seen guys get overpaid. We've seen guys who are non-big men get overpaid. So if you have any size that could play in the NBA, you're gonna make a lot of money, and chances are you might get overpaid. And for what he brings to the Lakers, and for what he adds to the Lakers, 4 years, $57 million I'm not gonna call it a bargain, but it's definitely not overpaying him. Andrew Bynum could be the difference between the Lakers winning a championship and not winning a championship. You saw what happened to the Lakers last season against the Boston Celtics when they had nobody to block shots, they had nobody to control the defensive boards, and they got punished by the Celtic big men, whether it was Leon Poe, Kendrick Perkins, or Kevin Garnett. The Boston, there was no resistance to the basket without Andrew Bynum in there. And now you put Andrew Bynum in the mix, he allows Lamar Odom to come off the bench, and you get him on the front line with Paul Gasol. That's going to be pretty tough to deal with if you're another NBA team go up against those two. So it was a deal that the Lakers had to make, and you know, if you're a Laker fan, and myself, I'm glad it's out the way. It will not be talked about for the rest of the year, and they could just go into the business of trying to win an NBA championship. Also in the news in NBA, and the NBA news would not be NBA news if you didn't have a New York Knicks story. The New York Knicks, and this has been an ongoing story, have a small dilemma by the name of Stephon Marbury. Marbury did not play in the opening night against Miami, which was a Knicks victory, by the way. He was put in DNP, did not play at all, not 1 minute. A day later, he was put on the inactive list, did not play last night against Philadelphia. And, you know, basically this is two, you know, you have Marbury going at the organization, and the organization coming at Marbury. Marbury is not going to take a buyout of his contract. He's scheduled this year to make $21.9 million. If anybody in their right mind in the Knicks organization thinks that Stephon Marbury is going to walk away from $21.9 million and settle for, you know, like $6 or $7 or $8 million, they're crazy. They're nuts. I mean, he will sit the bench for 81 straight games, not play a minute, but still be $22 million richer. And if you're the Knicks organization, and I understand that Marbury is a malcontent. He's one of the most, he has been one of the most selfish individual players to come along in this league in a long time. I mean, he's that bad. Every team that Marbury has left, as soon as he's left, has got better. Whether it be Minnesota, whether it be New Jersey, whether it be Phoenix. So I understand Marbury is not the greatest team guy. He, you know, he's been a me player for his entire career. I get that. But if you're the Knicks, you can't tell me that Mike D'Antoni, at least for 1 year, cannot stomach this guy and cannot find a way to work him into the rotation for, say, you know, 10 to 15 minutes a game. I mean, you cannot tell me that Stephon Marbury does not deserve some playing time on with that roster. The Knicks are not any good. I mean, it's one thing if he gets playing time, he goes out there and reverts back to, you know, to what we think he is and to what his old self as far as being, you know, shoot first, me first. You know, let him bury himself, let him do something crazy, let him be a problem on the court, and then you bench him, and then you put him on the active list. But, you know, but Marbury this season in two games has not had a chance to even get on the court. He has not had a chance to play basketball at all. You have to at least give him an opportunity this year. You only have to deal with it. Nobody, first of all, you're not going to trade him because no team is taking that contract. Even the fact that it's an expiring contract, nobody's touching Stephon Marbury this year. This is not the year to get Marbury. If you're a veteran team trying to win a championship, next year you can get Marbury on the cheap and with something to prove. This year you don't go near Stephon Marbury. So the Knicks can get that out their heads as far as trading, and they know that. But you can't tell me that Mike D'Antoni can't some way, in some form, fit him into the system that he's running. And I find it hard to believe that a guy cannot get any playing time. I mean, it's one thing not to start. If I could understand that, if you want to bring him off the bench, fine. Bring him off the bench. I have zero problem with that. And I don't think Marbury said even before the season, said he had no problem basically with coming off the bench, and that he would not be a problem with that. I mean you gotta find a way at least for 82 games, because the Knicks are not making the playoffs, to work him into your rotation somehow. I mean, you're gonna have a guy sit on the bench for 82 games and get no playing time and get paid $22 million. I mean, that does not make any sense. And again, Marbury is not gonna be, he is not gonna give in on this. The Knicks are playing a game of chicken, and they're gonna lose. They're gonna lose big time. He's not giving up $21 million. He's not gonna settle for anything less than that. He came out publicly, said it in the newspapers, and he's right. And it's business. I mean, would you walk away from $21 million to settle for, like I said, to settle for $6 or $7 million? I know I wouldn't. So they can, you know, so the Knicks, that situation is not going anywhere anytime soon. He's going to be on the team for at least this year, and then he'll become an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season. If I'm the Knicks, again, if I'm Mike D'Antoni, I will find a way to incorporate him into my rotation, at least until he did something, you know, where he did something to put himself out the rotation. It's one thing if Marbury is getting playing time and he's not doing the right things, he's not guarding anybody, he's taking bad shots, he's missing practices, he's doing stuff off the court that you say, hey, you know what, sit down. But you haven't even given him an opportunity to even do that. He didn't just, you know what, you're not playing. I mean, it's almost similar to the situation the Washington Redskins had a couple of years ago with LeVar Arrington. The guy was making all this money but couldn't find his way on the field for some reason. but we knew, everybody knew the reasons behind it. So, I mean, that is, like I said, that team is not going anywhere anytime soon. It's going to be a 2 to 3, it's going to be a 4 to 5 year rebuilding process with the Knicks. Just, I mean, just give them some minutes for this year and get it out the way. Just get it out the way. This year will be over before you know it anyway, and you'll be able to, you'll have that $21 million off the books. Speaking of off the books, that is 30 minutes in the books. We're at the halfway point of the Saturday morning wake-up call. Of course, I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. And we're going to go into the NFL now, and the quarterback position, which I don't know if you've noticed, and I'm sure if you're an NFL fan, you have noticed, the quarterback position is not what it used to be. You know, if you're somebody who's watched a lot of NFL over the years, and, you know, if you're 35 and over, if you're 40 and over, you remember the days in the night. You remember the days of Steve Young, Dan Marino, Troy Aikman, John Elway, Warren Moon, Jim Kelly. You know, just to name a few. Joe Montana. And you know, without mentioning, I mean, putting Warren Moon and Joe Montana aside, all those other guys were drafted in the '80s and played and had great careers, you know, Hall of Fame careers. Well, fast forward to 2008, those names have been replaced by guys like J.T. O'Sullivan. The J.T. O'Sullivans of the world, the Tyler Thigpens of the world, the Gus Frerotts, Dan Orlovsky, Kerry Collins, Matt Castles, Jamarcus Russells, Kyle Ortons, Joe Flaccos. And I'm not giving you backup quarterbacks. I'm giving you, well, they should be backup quarterbacks. I'm giving you guys who are starting in the NFL right now. J.T. O'Sullivan, up until this past week, was starting. Now he's a backup to Sean Hill. Matt Castle, because of the Tom Brady injury, now is starting. Dan Orlovsky of Detroit now is starting. Gus Frerotte is starting. Kerry Collins is a starter. Joe Flacco, Kyle Orton, all starters. And the quarterback position right now is just, I think, at a low point. Since I've been watching football, it's at an absolute low point right now. And it doesn't seem like there's any hope in sight that it's going to get any better. I just don't see it. And somewhere along the lines of between, I say, 98 and 2000, everything, I mean, the college game changed, drafting, GMs are making bad decisions. But I would point to the college game as being, and the systems that are being run in college as being the number one reason why the NFL lacks 10 good quarterbacks. You would be hard-pressed to find 10 good quarterbacks in the NFL right now. They're probably 4 to 5 elite quarterbacks. I'm talking Brady, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Donovan McNabb, Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, to a lesser extent, Eli Manning. But there are more quarterbacks who are either middle of the road, middle of the pack, or who just flat out can't play. And this was not always the case. I mean, these guys I just mentioned, as far as the J.T. O'Sullivans and Tyler Thigpens, forget about starting. If these guys came along in the '80s and '90s, they wouldn't even be on NFL rosters. Okay, they wouldn't even be in the CFL right now, the Arena League. I mean, these guys are awful. If you want to know why the NFL is wide open this year, look no further than the quarterback position, or the lack of great quarterbacks in the NFL right now. That's one of the major reasons why you have an NFL season that has completely been unpredictable, because from week to week, you don't know what you're going to get out of the quarterback position. And again, I go back to the college game, where you've seen the evolving of the spread offense And a number of teams run the spread offense right now. You got teams like West Virginia, Michigan, Texas. Texas Tech runs it. Missouri runs it. Of course, the most famous of this group that runs it is Florida with Urban Meyer, who has turned it into an absolute art form. I mean, you look what he did at Utah back in the 05 season. They went undefeated. And of course, Alex Smith ran that offense. Alex Smith, who by the way lost his job despite the fact of being the number one pick in the 2005 draft and signed that big, $24 million signing bonus. He came from that system, ran that system to a T. But that system has caused a lot of these quarterbacks to come in not ready to play for the NFL. You know, the spread offense. If I were to compare the spread offense to a pro style offense, it'd be like comparing. I would look at the spread offense as like driving an automatic, and a pro style offense as say driving a stick. The spread offense, it's either you either pass or you run. It eliminates decisions being made by the quarterback. It's designed to exploit a defense in terms of adding, it's basically a matchup of our best receivers versus your cornerbacks. And we think there are receivers because we have more quality receivers than there are quality cornerbacks that are going to win out. So it's great for college. I mean, it's a great gimmick offense for college. Urban Meyer, again, won a championship with it. But it does not translate to the NFL in terms of developing a cornerback. Is one of the major reasons why Vince Young, besides his mental problems, has had a problem with it. He ran the spread offense at Texas, and he either made a read or two or ran. In that offense, you don't have to make too many complicated decisions. It simplifies the game for a quarterback. And in the NFL, the quarterback position is everything but simple. I mean, anybody who watches NFL football who follows NFL football knows how complex these offenses are with these playbooks, and especially at that position. The NFL position is the most difficult position in all sports. The quarterback position is the most difficult position in all of sports. And that offense has ruined that position. That offense, in college, again, it's great for college. And I'm not knocking Urban Meyer for running the offense. If you can win 10 to 11 games a year, compete for a championship, then so be it. More power to you. And trust me, Urban Meyer is not thinking about Tim Tebow in 2012 trying to make, in 2009, 2010, trying to make the transition to the NFL. He's thinking about keeping his job, and he's thinking about winning championships. But I mean, it's hard enough to come into the NFL with 4 years of experience running a pro-style offense. Most quarterbacks struggle anyway. I mean, very few quarterbacks. You have a Dan Marino, you have a Peyton Manning, you have a Brent Roethlisberger that have been able to step in right away and play right away and have success. Most quarterbacks, there's a learning curve. Some quarterbacks, the learning curve is 2 years. Some quarterbacks, the learning curve is 3 to 4 or 5 years. Some guys, the learning curve is until they turn 30 or get to their 30s. As in the case of point of a guy like a Rich Gannon or a Kurt Warner or a Jeff Garcia or even Trent Green. And these guys coming out of college, they are just not ready to play quarterback in the position in the NFL. They're just not ready, and they're not being developed. They're just not being developed correctly. And the other major reason, and part of the other major reason is these missed draft picks. I look back at that '99 draft where you had Akili Smith, Kay McNown, Tim Couch, Dante Culpepper, Donovan McNabb. As of right now, out of those five guys, one of those guys is currently on a roster right now. And that, of course, is Donovan McNabb. Dante Culpepper has a chance to have some good years, but has some injury troubles and has faded. Is trying to get back in it, but right now he's out of the NFL. Tim Couch was a bust. Kay McNabb. bus. Achilles Smith bust. And you look at ever since that draft, ever since even the 2000 draft, 2000 on out, there have only been a handful of quality quarterbacks chosen. Three of them came in one draft that still played and have won Super Bowls. And that, of course, in the 2004 draft, where you had Eli Manning, Phillip Rivers, and Ben Roethlisberger. Eli Manning and Roethlisberger have won Super Bowls. And Phillip Rivers currently leads the NFL in touchdown passes thrown this season. But other than that, I mean, you have guys who, David Carr, number one pick in 2002, bust. Joey Harrison, number three pick in that same draft, bust. Patrick Ramsey, first round pick in that same draft, backup quarterback. Chad Pennington, first round pick in the 2000 draft. Okay, has had a decent career. Carson Palmer, 2003, had a pretty good career. Has a chance to be an elite quarterback if he can stay healthy and get with another organization. It's not happening in Cincinnati, unfortunately. But most of these quarterbacks that have been chosen, you know, since that 99 draft have not gotten the job done. And again, the major reason for that is it's not the cupboard is bare as far as the quarterback position. The cupboard is absolutely bare as far as that position. I mean, in high school, you can get away with being the best, with putting the best athlete that he can get a scholarship to a college. But once you get to college, that's when these guys have to learn how to play the position. That's when they learn the nuances of playing the quarterback position, the footwork and the mechanics. That's what it's learned in college. By the time you get to the pros, if you don't have proper mechanics and proper footwork, by the time you get to the pros, it's going to be a long road for a quarterback, a long road. And I just think that these college coaches have just, you know, again, sacrificed quarterback play for gimmick offenses and for trying to win championships. You look at that spread offense, everybody's running it now. And it's not, and I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I don't see anything on the horizon as far as quality quarterbacks coming out of college. I don't see anything. Tim Tebow, to me, is a pure example of a college quarterback. Colt McCoy, it's a wait-and-see thing. Chase Daniel, wait-and-see. I have to see it before I believe it, to see if these guys can actually, you know, translate their skills to the NFL game. Because the NFL game is a totally different game in terms of what they're running right now in college. Right, it's a completely different game, and these guys have to show you that they can make that transition, you know, from running that offense. You're more likely to see guys like a Tom Brady who gets drafted in the sixth round become big stars than you are even to see a guy who gets picked in the first round. You know, you see a Trent Edwards a couple of years ago. Seems like he's going to be a very good player, and all his teammates love him. He was a third round pick out of Stanford, so you're more likely to see that kind of player, that kind of guy get, you know, teams stumble into a guy rather than outright making that right choice with a number one pick. And that's the direction the quarterback position has gone into. As far as this week's slate of games, there are some very good games. This was supposed to be a better weekend, a better week of football in terms of the NFL. But unfortunately, injuries and other circumstances have kind of taken away. I mean, you look at some of the matchups. You have Dallas at New York. And again, before the season, this looked like a game of the year type deal. With these two teams having been division rivals, having met in the playoffs last season. But right now, I mean, Dallas absolutely comes into this game limping. I mean, they come into this game banged up. You don't know, you know, I mean, you don't know which Dallas team is going to show up. You don't know if that offensive line can block for Brad Johnson. Who knows? You could see Brooks Bollinger in the game, but more likely you won't. So this is a game that has, you know, again, injuries have taken off some of the luster with this matchup. I would not be surprised I would not be surprised if this were a close game. If I had to pick this game, I would pick a close game. I think that Dallas, the Giants have struggled at home. They've struggled over the last year or so at home in terms of not so much winning, but just playing teams that they probably should beat by a lot, close to the vest. I can see Dallas being a desperate team. Dallas is absolutely desperate at 5-3. To try to keep up with the Redskins, try to keep up with the Giants in terms of that division, also just in terms of making a playoff in general. So I would expect a close game. But the Giant pass rush will be a little bit too much for Dallas. And I expect the Giants to win a close game. But that game, again, before the season, you were looking at a possible game of the year. That game lost a lot of luster off of. A lot of luster with these Cowboy injuries and with this inconsistent play. Another game that looked like it had a chance to be a great game for the season. You have New England traveling to Indianapolis, and again, this is a desperate time for the Indianapolis Colts. Right now, they find themselves out of the playoffs, and the playoffs were to start, and they have to have this game. I mean, they. You know, they're not going to win the division, but they still have the opportunity to make the playoffs in the wide open AFC. But at three and four right now, they have to have this game. I think Indianapolis will come out there and play well. New England, remember the last time New England played a team that had to have a big game, that had to need a game, they got their doors blown off by the San Diego Chargers a few weeks back. I don't trust Matt Castle in back-to-back weeks. New England has been a little inconsistent when trying to put together back-to-back quality games. I know they played well. They did not play well at all against St. Louis last week. I know they had a good game against Denver, but I would expect Indianapolis to go out there and win this game. I think it will be a close game, but I expect Indianapolis to get the job done. They remember Indianapolis will be getting back a couple of injured players, a couple of key players, Bob Sanders and Joseph Addai. Will be returned to Indianapolis for this game, and they missed Bob Sanders in the worst way as they have struggled stopping the run somehow, for some reason. I mean, Bob Sanders is the key to their run defense, so I expect a great performance out of Indianapolis in this game. Again, it'll be a close game. Indianapolis does not throw anybody out. They beat Baltimore. They killed Baltimore, but outside of Baltimore, all their games have been close, so I would expect this game to not be any different. Again, New England has had trouble putting together back-to-back performances against quality teams. They've had, you know, they've been okay against the bad teams, but again, I think Indianapolis is still a quality team, and they will have a tough time in this game. The Jets play will be at Buffalo, and again, this is a game that you look at on paper, it has all the possibilities of being a blowout in terms of the Jets struggling with their offense. Brett Favre is throwing interceptions left and right. He leads the league in interceptions with 11. Buffalo is coming off, of course, that loss to Miami. But I expect the Jets to go up there and play a tough game. I think, I mean, it's a division game. Brett Favre is due to have a big game. Thomas Jones has ran the ball pretty well. This should be a pretty good game. I don't think Buffalo is one to blow anybody out themselves. I mean, they know they keep teams in the game, despite the fact that Trent Edwards is playing well. He's playing good football. This should be a very good game, but I expect Buffalo to win this game and to continue to lead the AFC East. Another good game on the docket. Green Bay travels to Tennessee. Tennessee is due for a letdown. They're absolutely, I mean, coming off the Monday night game. If this game were at Green Bay, I would almost pick Green Bay. I really would. But I don't trust Green Bay on the road. Green Bay has not played well, hasn't played well on the road at all this year. Their best win, their best win on the road this season is against Seattle, and Seattle's awful. Seattle's terrible, has been terrible this year. This will be another close game because Tennessee is a team that, again, that doesn't normally, does not blow out good teams. They've beaten up on the bad teams, but against a pretty playoff caliber team, I don't expect Tennessee to run away with this game, but they will find a way to just get by. If you were betting the points, you probably would take the points in this game and take Green Bay to cover if you were a betting man. Because, again, I expect, again, Aaron Rodgers has played well. He just got a contract extension, and Tennessee does not blow these kind of teams out. The game of the week, for week nine, has to be Pittsburgh at Washington. Of course, it will be on Monday night. Washington is banged up as far as some key with Sean Springs being out. Jason Taylor is out. Taylor has not been affected at all this season for the Redskins. But certainly you did not know that coming into the season that he would be this injury prone. But he's had struggles staying on the field. So has Sean Springs, for that matter. Springs, and again, the Redskins could have addressed this in the offseason, could have addressed it in the draft instead of taking a million receivers. The age, Sean Springs being 34 year old cornerback. When he's been on the field, he's been great. But the problem is staying on the field. If you want to see some defense, this is the game to watch. Both these teams have excellent defenses. Pittsburgh comes in with the number one defense in the league. Washington is ranked number six and has played well. Has played well in spite of not having a great pass rush. This is a very tough game to pick because Pittsburgh is good. Has been very good in these road games as far as having to win a game that they probably shouldn't have won, but end up winning. They beat Jacksonville early in the season in a game where they were banged up but still won. But I think Washington just gets by in this game. I think there will be some plays. Jason Campbell will have some trouble with Pittsburgh's blitzes and their how they disguise their blitzes. But I think there will be some plays to be made against that Pittsburgh secondary. If you can hold up against their blitz, the secondary outside Troy Polamalu is very suspect. Brian McFadden is out for this game. The rest of those cornerbacks are not that good. Deshae Townsend is okay. Ryan Clark has been banged up in that secondary, so there will be some plays to be made against that Pittsburgh secondary. If your offensive line can generate enough time to give your quarterback to throw the ball, that will be the key to this game. Is the Redskins handling the Pittsburgh blitzes? Dick LeBeau does a great as well as anybody in terms of disguising blitzes and coming. They will come anytime, anywhere. First down, third down, it doesn't matter. They'll throw the kitchen sink at you. But I expect Washington to win a very close game. This game could go either way. I would not be the least surprised if Pittsburgh came out, despite the fact that the game is at Washington and won this game. Would not be the least bit surprised if Pittsburgh won this game, especially coming off the loss against the Giants last Sunday. So the NFL, again, good schedule, not great. It should have been a great week as far as the NFL goes. You have a couple of powerhouse games in terms of Dallas and Giants and New England and Indianapolis that just don't have the same excitement that they had going into the season. And that takes away from a schedule. And you also have the fact that you have New Orleans, San Diego, Carolina all have bye weeks. Three of those teams are playoff caliber teams. Even San Diego is struggling right now. They still came into the season being a playoff caliber team, so that will soften up the schedule and make it not look as good as it was as it would have say at the beginning of the season, or just say two or three weeks ago. As far as from a local standpoint for the Redskins, listen, the team is 6-2 at the halfway point. And you have to love what you saw last week out of Jim Zorn and Greg Blosch. Jim Zorn got Clint Forrest's face, held him accountable, and I think did a great job of handling that situation. Clint Forrest, if you missed it, was not ready to play was not ready to play for right before a series when the Redskins were down 7-3. Detroit had just scored. He had some equipment issues, and he wasn't ready to go into the game. Zorn was not happy about it. That's the reason why you saw Sean Alexander in that particular series for a couple plays. Clint Boyce obviously didn't like it, but, you know, so what? Yeah, you know, get over it. Should have been ready to play. Zorn got in his face and did what any good coach or any coach with a backbone should do. I mean, if you're a coach of the NFL, you've got to be in control of your other team. You've got to be in control of that locker room. And, again, this is something in the past that was not taking place. I mean, the Redskins players, especially the ones that make a lot of money, have had their behinds kissed over the course of the period that Daniel Snyder has been the owner. And, you know, they haven't produced many victories with that way of doing things. So, I love what I saw out of Jim Zorn last week. Greg Blige, the defensive coordinator of the Redskins, comes out there after a game where the defense only gives up, 57 yards rushing, 17 points, and rips his defense. I mean, if you had turned on post-game live, you would have thought that the Redskins, and without watching the game, you would have thought the Redskins lost the game. But again, he sees the big picture, understands that, the mistakes cannot, certain mistakes will not be tolerated and cannot be made if the Redskins want to get to their eventual goal, and that's to the Super Bowl. And it's not out of the question that the Redskins can make it or possibly win the Super Bowl. I mean, the NFL is, when Tom Brady goes down with the injury in week one, the NFL became wide open. And it absolutely is wide open for about 8 to 10 teams to possibly get to the Super Bowl. I mean, you might have at least 10 to 15 teams that can get to the Super Bowl. I would say there are at least 8 to 10 teams that can probably win the Super Bowl. And in the past, I have not been able to say that. I mean, you've had about 3 to 4 teams that could win a Super Bowl in the past. Now it's about at least a good 8 to 10. So, and the Redskins are one of them. I mean, they have a great running game. Clinton Portis is the MVP of the league right now. Jason Campbell's played well. His quarterback rating over 100. Have one of the better defenses in the league. So they have all the ingredients to make a Super Bowl run. And you like coaches, having coaches hold the players up, hold the players accountable for their actions. Because the players will never be accountable for their own actions. It's never a player's fault when something goes wrong. Never. And you can go across the board, you can go to any sport. You're going to blame the organization, or they're going to blame the coach, the media. Everybody gets blamed except the player in professional sports for the most part. So you got to have coaches that hold players accountable for their actions. That's all there is to it. Just a couple minutes remain. Again, the call number, if you want to get a last-minute phone call in, is 347-215-6176. Next week, we will look into college basketball, preview the college basketball season, and I understand it certainly will be more than just North Carolina, I can tell you that. But look at the college basketball season. We'll also, again, look at the NFL, look at next week's big matchups in the NFL, and we'll do some hot stove baseball. The baseball season officially now is over, so we'll look into some of the off-season moves that could possibly be made. Manny Ramirez, of course, is one of them for next season, so we'll look into that. Also, a host of other things that we will do for the program. Again, if you have any comments or any input, You can go to URL on my Facebook page and chime in, send me a message, or you can send me a message on this blogtalkradio.com page. Send me an email, send me a message on what your thoughts on the program. Again, we are just beginning with the program, so we're putting some new stuff in. It's definitely not a finished product, and I appreciate those who have listened to the program for your support of the program, and we will be back next week, same time, and same blog radio channel. In closing, I'm going to leave you with some music here. It is from one of my favorite programs of all time, one of great television shows of all time, and I feel called The Wire. So I will leave you with the music, with some Blake Lee with Blakely the fall, and we will be on our way. As I time it up, and try to get it up here, Blakely the fall, the ending montage to The Wire, the program is again, so goodness. If you don't like Blakely, you have to love this.